As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Right there on the cusp. That's the biggest challenge always is you want to go from being an NHL player to an NHL player, and then you want to go from being an NHL player to playing regularly, and then you want to go to a top four. So there's always progression you want to make, and he's in a battle.
That's Maple Leafs head coach Mike Babcock talking about Frankie Corrado, but really talking about plenty of Maple Leafs who are on the cusp. Are you an AHLer or an NHLer being sent down today by the squad? Kirby Reichel, Frederick Gauthier, and Kasperi Kapanen will go through some of the cuts that have been made and cuts that are still to be made. Jeff Merrickin for Gord Stellick. This is Hockey Nation for October the 8th, where the Maple Leafs and the Red Wings will complete their exhibition slash preseason schedule with a matchup tonight in Detroit. This one goes at 7 o'clock Eastern alongside Todd Hulishko. Todd, how are you this afternoon, sir?
Jeff, very well. Listen, this is the season premiere of the Hockey Nation, and my regular partner's not here today.
AWOL. You know, we diplomatically call it. This is how we diplomatically say it in the industry.
What's that?
Gord Stellick is on assignment.
he's busy. That guy works so much. This is good. I believe he's taking a little bit of family time off today, and well deserved, because that guy works harder than any person I know.
He does a morning show 5 days a week on NHL radio.
And then he's doing Hockey Central.
He's on with you, and then we see him on Hockey Central. I swear, I opened my fridge this morning, and when the light went off, Gord Stellick popped out. I put a piece of bread in the toaster this morning, and when it popped up, Gord Stellick was on one side. Everywhere you go, you see Gord Stellick title.
Yeah, he's everywhere. And I'm going to say producer Matt Brown was throwing a couple little lob jabs at Gord. I will not repeat that stuff. He's too good of a man, Matt, to say something when he's not here to defend himself.
Save that for Twitter after a couple of tips.
Yes.
Coming up on today's program, we'll talk to Mike Zeisberger of Post Media, get us all caught up on what's happening around Leafland. Also, Ken Holland, longtime general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, will be aboard. In the meantime, some cuts today by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Nothing exactly surprising, unless you're a fan of Kirby Reichel, Frederick Gauthier, or Kasperi Kapanen specifically. And some interesting moves still to make. Waivers do play into this. We expect Andrew Campbell to be sent to the Marlies. You wonder, we heard Mike Babcock talking about Frank Corrado, right-hand shot. Do they carry eight defensemen, or do they roll the dice with waivers with Frank Corrado? Fraze, there's a situation there. Colin Greening, Peter Holland, Prust, Shashnikov, Levo, Zach Hyman, and Connor Brown, who, by the way, does not require waivers. And teams always say the same thing, Todd. You know, we're not just going to go the path of least resistance. It waivers be damned. It doesn't matter. Mm. If you make the team, you make the team.
Mm-hmm.
They say that with, you know, a pinch of salt and their fingers crossed behind their back.
Exactly.
How do you see this one playing out from your perch?
Well, I mean, I was looking at the guys that are still remaining as well. And, you know, the guys that are on the bubble right now are going to be the Connor Browns, the Byron Frazes, like you said, Josh Levo. Mind you, Josh Levo has had an outstanding camp. I think that he's pretty much made the team. But the guys like Brandon Prust, he's an interesting one. He comes in, and when he came on a PTO, he was looking at teams that he thought that he could actually make. And a guy like Brandon Prust comes in, you know, we all know he doesn't have the skill set, but he's got that physical nature to his game, and a guy that may be able to fit in here, and Toronto could use someone like that. But this comes down to, I honestly believe that Mike Babcock is going to, I think that he would keep the guys that he thinks belongs on the team. Mm-hmm. But I do believe, as well as you do too, Jeff, is this is a business. And you've really got to play your P's and Q's properly in terms of who you're going to lose. Are you willing to lose a guy? Like, they go and they sign a Peter Holland, you know, one-way deal, not a lot of money. But are they going to risk, like, putting him on waivers? Because I believe he would get picked up. And I liked Peter Holland last year. But that's another type of guy. Is he going to be around? Or are they going to try to wave him through? Like, listen, I think this game has a little bit to do with the decision for Mike Babcock. But at the end of the day, I think on the whiteboard already, they already know who is going to be with this team and who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's. I mean, this is a tough one. There are so many young guys that could potentially make this team. But there are some options that this guy, that they could actually move. And I'm just, okay, that's a lot of cluster. I'm just talking.
I'm
confused because I don't know who's actually going to be on this team.
Let me ask you something specifically then. Let's go right down the middle, okay? Tyler Bozak, Nazem Kadri, Austin Matthews, speed bump.
Yes.
who is your fourth line center? Yes, we're beginning the program today by talking about the fourth line center for the Toronto Maple Leafs. All the cliches about Toronto media apply right now. Who's your fourth line center for the Maple Leafs?
You know, if you want to, if you're going to go with the fact of having a little bit of experience on there with that, you're looking at Brooks Lyte. I mean, he's probably the obvious choice right now to throw in there. And then Byron Fraser, where does he fit in? I mean, those are the two guys that you know may find themselves looking the outside in. How, and Peter Holland would be the other guy too that would obviously get in there, but. What it depends on what this organization wants right now. Do they want to give all the young guys an opportunity, or do they really believe that they need some of this veteran leadership to help these young guys grow? Mm-hmm. And you know, for me, I don't know which side I'm on right now, because I've been on both sides where I've played with a young team, and I've played with guys that basically took ice time away from the young guys that weren't going to be part of the team long term. Which hence is Brooks Lyte. I mean, obviously he's got another year left. Is he going to come back with Toronto next year? Who knows? But how valuable is his experience for these young guys in the short term right now? I don't know if it's mandatory that you have someone like that on the team. Maybe just go with energetic youthful group and let them learn on the job. I'm not 100% sure.
You know Mike Babcock. You know who he is. You know how he operates. You know he's a proud man. You know the finishing 30th isn't on the menu for any coach.
Doesn't want to do it again.
So here's the question that I always ask about the Maple Leafs this year when I look at cuts and look at composition of the team. And this relates to someone like Mitch Marner as it relates to someone like Brooks Lyte. If you're Mike Babcock, how many kids are you comfortable going with? That, to me, is the big question here. Mm-hmm. You know, for every Roman Polak, is there a Frank Corrado? For every Brooks Lyte, is there a Mitch Marner? How many are you comfortable saying this is our team to start the season?
Well, I think I'm quoting Mike Babcock as saying that's a tough call. I mean, he's not sure. I think that was his exact quote. Yeah. I'm not sure what the right answer is for that. I don't know. And that's why I think, they're going to play the beginning of the season. I think that I can see a lot of these young guys being on the starting lineup and seeing how it goes the first couple weeks. Because you do have a little bit of wiggle room with guys that you could send down. That'll get through, like the Mitch Marners, you're going to give him 9 games for sure. I think that he's going to be here a little bit longer. The William Nylanders don't have to go through waivers. These types of guys are all going to get a look early. And I think if he sees the path that they're going as progressive and they can play and they're doing well, because the one thing that I've always learned too, Jeff, in the NHL, these exhibition games really mean jack. It's to give you a chance to get back into shape, but the real games start when game one of the regular season starts. So I think they're going to give these young guys an opportunity to really get a taste of it early in the season. And if it doesn't work early, I think that's going to be your answer, whether you go with youth or you have, how many young guys you can actually have. I really believe that they're going to let the first 10 games dictate which direction they're going to go with this team.
Everybody has a theory on Mitch Marner. Let's get yours here out on the table in the first edition of this program this season.
Yep.
Some say send him back right away. There's no point, too many kids already. Others say, well, I'll give him that 9-game taste. Others say 9's not as important as the number 39. That's when you burn off an entire year towards free agency. The 9 games to 10 burns it off by way of entry-level deal. Some say you give him up until the World Juniors. It's in Toronto and Montreal. You can keep your eyes closely on him. He still has something to prove there. At the end of that, you go the Anthony Duclair route, what Arizona did with Anthony Duclair. Send him back to junior. He went to the Quebec Rampart. Send him back to junior hockey. London Knights, Mark Hunter's team, still very much under the control and under the nose of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. They'll have another stacked team. They may go back-to-back for the Memorial Cup this season. What's your theory?
Well,
or stay the whole year.
No, listen, it's funny because you get different views from different organizations on what they think is best for that individual. What's best for the kid, right? You always hear it, Jeff, what is going to be the best for the long-term development? So here's my theory on this is for Mitch Marner. I've kind of gone opposite of what, I think the standard view on this is. I believe that a kid, if he's proven himself in training camp and even the previous year, to start in the NHL, you should. I don't care what happens in terms of saying, oh, it's best for his development to start down in the minor leagues.
Saying that, give him that as a cookie.
Yes.
That's a cookie for him.
100%. And I say, the reason why I say this is because I've gone through this situation where if you start, and it happened with me in Calgary, and this is why I'm using my own experience, is I was given an opportunity right out of the gates where they said, you know what, you're on the team. And I ended up staying up, I'm going to go way back, but I think it was in 96. And I got to play 7 or 8 games right out of the hop. And I knew that I was on the cusp. I didn't know if I was going to be, but then I got sent back afterwards. And I'm sitting there.
Did you feel you deserved to be sent back?
I think so. Okay. I think I wasn't quite good. Quite ready yet. And I went back, but the thing that for me as a player, I had a burning desire to want to get back so fast because I had the taste of it at the beginning. I started the season, the opening, the season opener. You're in there, the lights, the music, the people. It's awesome. You're so excited for a young guy. That's what you want to get to. You want to be there. So you're there, and all of a sudden they send you back. Some guys you can say, oh, they're going to go back and their heads are going to be down. I believe that's complete opposite. Mm-hmm. I believe guys go back down to the minors. They know that what it's like to be up there, and they elevate their game. And I think it depends on each personality. Every player is different. But the top-tier guys, a guy like Marner, a guy like Nylander, these top-tier guys, they know that they're going to get back. They'd rather get back there sooner than later. So give them that opportunity early. And it, you know, maybe they run with it. Maybe they don't go back at all. But when they, if they do get sent down, they know what it's like. I want to get back there as quick as I can. They'll elevate their game down the American League. Mm-hmm. That's my theory. Other guys are complete opposite about that. They think that they'll put their heads in the sand and they're not going to worry about it and they're going to pout. I don't agree with that at all.
Let's bring our man Mike Zeisberger from Post Media into the conversation. Mike, we're having the quintessential Toronto Maple Leafs conversation today. And on that, we'll wish you good afternoon. What do you do with Mitch Marner? Everyone has a different schedule for him. Some overlap, some don't. How do you see the season playing out for the young first rounder?
Well, and thanks for having me on, guys. I guess we're now out of World Cup mode into NHL mode. By the way, where's Gord?
He is on assignment.
Something to do with hot dog assignment, is that right?
He is. I did get a rumor that he was milling around the ACC lobby looking for those $20 gift coupons and seeing if they will run into the Leafs season, if those will be accepted. So we don't know 100%, but that's where we think he is.
You know, and just to fill the listeners in, that was what the media got at the World Cup, or $20 meal vouchers, and having now gone 2 weeks with going through there, that gets you what, about half a hot dog and two french fries?
If you're lucky.
Pretty much about it.
If you're lucky.
But, you know, getting back to the Marner thing, I think if he has held his own, which from what I've seen he has, I keep him. Just because if you send him back to the OHL, can he learn any more there, guys?
Hang on. I would pause on that and say not necessarily the OHL, but he had a very underwhelming World Juniors last year. And I'm still a big fan of, you know, you never miss anything if you send a kid back for one extra year. As far as having something to prove, I wouldn't say it's at the OHL level, size. I'll agree with you there. But at the World Junior level, best on best U20, I still think there's some business there for him.
Well, that's an interesting aspect of this whole thing. And that you know, I don't want to sound like I'm sitting on the fence, but I don't see this as a black and white issue whatsoever. And the other thing is, Jeff, I mean, the fact, you know, I brought up that what more can you learn at the OHL level, because he's been dominant there. But, you know, upon further review, you look at who's coaching there in Dale Hunter. And you know what? I mean, I know Dale rubs some people the wrong way. But you go around the NHL and look at the guys that have come out from that London program. And I talked to some of these guys. It's not during the playoffs last year. It's not just the fact that a lot of players get drafted out of London, because there's other programs and teams that get lots of draftees out of there. But why is it that the guys that get drafted out of London, you know, go down the list from, you know, Ole Matta to Max Domi to Rick Nash. I mean, we can go on and on and on.
Corey Perry
fell pretty
good.
These guys, and they say that Dale Hunter and his coaching, not only does he coach you at the OHL level, but he coaches you to be prepared to be a National Hockey League player. And, you know, as simple as that sounds, not every OHL coach has that kind of magic touch to be able to take a top prospect like they've had and produce them like that.
If we can pause on the London example here, and let's not forget another former Londonite who's done very well for himself. Thank you very much, T. Holushko Esquire. The thing about London as well, if you look at all the junior hockey markets across Canada, there are 60 of them, and I would maintain that London best replicates what it is to go through an NHL season with the packed house. And yep. there's a real premium on the Stars. And you know, if you're a top line guy with the London Knights, I mean, you're getting big minutes. I mean, we even joked at the Memorial Cup last year in Red Deer with a bunch of the London Knights guys. I remember asking Marner once, like, there was been a couple of moments where he wouldn't come off the ice for 2.5 minutes. He'd be there the entire power play. You know, there'd be a whistle. He'd catch his breath and he'd wheel right back out there on the point. So if you're a big name player, Corey Perry, you listed a bunch of other ones as well as eyes, you're getting your minutes. And the environment itself
yep.
replicates what it is to be an NHLer, albeit at the junior hockey level.
And, you know, Jeff, anybody that hasn't been to the arena down there, it literally is almost a mini Air Canada Center with
10,000 seats. Yeah, 10,000 seats, and it's packed every night. Everyone's wearing green.
You know, the devil's advocate over here, I'm going to, Zyze, I was telling Merrick earlier that I have no issue if they were to stay up. I think that I agree with you 100%. I think Dale Hunter is a fantastic coach. Mitch Marner's been under there for 3 years. I mean, I don't know how much more he's going to learn from him right now. I mean, what he's learned already, you never stop learning. I get that. And if you are to go back to an organization, London is, like you said, Jeff, it's the perfect place to go to, you know, improve your game, and you've got the best coaching staff, you've got the best organization. But for me, Mitch Marner, I think it's just time that Toronto finally says, you know what? Let's give a young guy an opportunity and let's just keep him all year. If he's got that skill set, if he can play with the team, and let him develop. For me, I just think that developing at the National Hockey League level far outweighs anything in terms of sending him back. And I think this kid has a skill set. I think he's mature. I think he's got the capability. Let him run and let him learn on the go this year. I think this is the type of player that you keep around for pretty much the entire year. And if you got to give him to the World Juniors at Christmas, let him go there. But let him learn at the NHL level right now.
Yeah, and we started this segment, that's the way I was leaning. But I do think Jeff makes a good point on the best on best, especially with the fact that the World Juniors is going to be back in North America, specifically in Canada this year. So you are playing on the NHL type ice surface and not the bigger ones, because let's face it, that is a different style and conducive to a different type of play altogether. But it would, I wouldn't think it's the end of the world if they keep him up. Like I said, I tend to lean a little bit towards your the way you're thinking, Todd. And let this kid play, because like I said, at the OHL level, we put the World Juniors aside for a second. But I don't know what much more he can accomplish at that level or learn at that level.
Mike Zeisberger joins us from Post Media. You are listening to the maiden voyage this season, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Merrick in for Gord Stellick of Hockey Nation for October the 8th. It is the Maple Leafs. It is the Detroit Red Wings, both concluding their preseason action later on this evening at 7 o'clock Eastern. Okay, beginning of the program here, Zeiss, we were trying to sort this one out and sift this one through the strainer. Fraze, Greening, Holland, Pruss, Shoshnikov, Levo, Hyman, Brown. How do you see it shaking out? Who's still
Holy.
Left on the chessboard at the end of it? Put on your thinking toque.
Are you kidding? I'm still trying to go through the assembly line of names you just wheeled off there.
That's how I was too, Zyze. It's a tough one. There's
hard.
So many young kids that could crack it.
You know what?
It's hard.
I do know this, and this is, people may say this is a cop-out, but I've known Mike Babcock going back far further than when he was coach of the Leafs to back when he was coach of the Ducks and then did a little bit of television work. And the one thing about Mike Babcock, we can sit here and debate which of those five or six or seven guys we think is going to make the team and which guys won't. But Mike Babcock, when he makes up his mind about a player, okay, anything that you or I or sometimes his assistant coaches say to him isn't going to change his feeling on it. So I think the one thing that I would say, and I've noticed this the last couple of games that the Maple Leafs have played, and if you read between the lines about what Coach Babcock has said, the one thing that has, disappointed him a lot is not so much the work ethic, but maybe the sense of battling for pucks in the other team's end on the forecheck, and even in his own zone. So I would suggest that right now, a guy that, you know, or guy or guys that have shown more of a penchant in the one-on-one battles to come out with the puck might get a little bit of an edge over maybe a couple of the guys that have a little bit more natural skill, but have shied away from those situations. And I think that in Babcock's mind, those are the guys, you know, maybe you've got a little bit of, maybe you're one of the more talented guys in the system, but you're not showing that sense of battle in the corners. I think in Babcock's mind, and he mentioned this the other day, you know, the Detroit recipe was always to send guys back down to the A, because look, you have a lot of young guys here. These are boys that are playing against men. And the one thing about the AHL, you're still playing against men. And that's where you learn this kind of sense of battle. So I know I didn't give you any specific names, but I do think that that is going to be a litmus test, because you can be the fanciest skater that, you know, out there. But if you're not sticking your nose into the corner to dig out pucks, I think in Mike Babcock's mind, mm-hmm. they go to the A and refine your skills.
Now, a little peek behind the curtains here at Rogers, specifically Sportsnet 590, The Fan. If you don't talk about Austin Matthews for more than 20 minutes, it's a fine. And so we don't get deductions from our paychecks, Todd Hilischko. Quickly, ask Mike Zeisberger about Austin Matthews.
Well, what do you think, Zeis? Is he the real deal? And where's he going to be? I mean, he's right now, I think they have him penciled in as a number three centerman for the Leafs. How quick is it going to be until we see him as the number one center for the Toronto Maple Leafs this year?
Well, I think it's going to depend on the chemistry that he develops with certain wingers. I have no issues with them starting at him at number three, because as Babcock said during the World Cup, you know what? The table is set for him to work his way up. The one thing that I want to see, I do think he's the real deal. I mean, I had a chance to talk to a guy that you guys may have heard of from before, Matt Sundin.
Familiar.
He once was did something in this town for that hockey team. But he watched Austin Matthews. He was obviously part of the Team Sweden hierarchy. He watched Austin Matthews in the World Cup. He was very, very, very impressed. And there was a play where it was the game against Sweden where Austin was on his knees and stick-handled around and through Victor Hedman, who I consider to be a top-five defenseman in the entire National Hockey League. And Matt's just said, you know what, that's something that you cannot teach. So I think this kid is the real deal, but it's going to, you know, the table is set for him to move up in the lineup. The question is, when you start going up against the Ken Hitchcocks and coaches like that, that take away time and space, okay? And this isn't the young guns anymore, okay, at the World Cup where you have all this open ice. Coaches are there to take away time and space from kids like Austin Matthews. I think that's going to be, we're really going to get a peek or insight into what this kid's about and how he fights through that. I think that, you know, there are indications that he will be able to do it, but we'll have to wait and see. But like I said, I don't have any issues with them starting him at the number three center position, because you know what? If he earns his way and if he continues to be consistent with the flashes of brilliance that we have seen, he'll be the number one center in no time.
Mike Zeisberger joins us from Post Media. Off the Maple Leafs page, you cover the NHL at large, as we all know, Zeis. Your thoughts on the trading of Nail Yakupov? Now, the Edmonton Oilers have, within a couple of months, traded two former first overall picks. Yakupov goes for pennies on the dollar to the St. Louis Blues, to which Mike Zeisberger says...
Well, I... would have thought that they would have got more for him, but I guess the whole league is has kind of a furrowed brow when they look towards Yakupov. There's a lot of people that weren't sold on him being the first overall draft pick. I really think that it's a no lose situation for Doug Armstrong. I think that's a pretty shrewd pickup. I mean, what kind of gamble? You didn't give up that much. You've got a kid there who, hey, let's face it, maybe there is some upside, maybe, you know, playing in a place like St. Louis where there's not that focus on you being a former first overall draft pick, you know, maybe that helps him. And maybe his countryman, Vladimir Tarasenko, gives him a boot in the hockey pants. Like, who knows what's going to happen here. But what do you guys think?
I think
it's a no-lose for St. Louis.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that Peter Chiarelli just wanted to get rid of a headache.
Todd? Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it's essentially it's a trade for me, right? It's they get rid of Yakubov's contract and they're able to go and sign Chris Russell. So that's yes. Essentially how I look at it.
Yeah.
And
but cap space was never an issue. They still have eight to play.
No, I know. But I mean, it's nice. That's why I'm saying it's just a trade. It's off for one. I mean, the
addition by subtraction.
Exactly. It stays the same. So I think that Yakupov, I don't know. I mean, he was an unbelievable scorer in juniors. And I think you're exactly right, Zyze. This is a situation where St. Louis is saying, man, we've got all sorts of depth as it is right now. If this kid doesn't pan out, it's not the end of the world. We got another year in his contract. That's it. And then we're released from it. So I think for St. Louis, it's a situation to hopefully this kid's going to be able to, you know, reboot his career and play for a, you know, a team that's competitive right now and maybe not have to be the guy, which he, yeah. Well, basically he yep. wasn't in Edmonton either, but gives him an opportunity. And we've seen it happen to other players before that they go into another organization and they're able to, you know, find their game. And for Edmonton, yeah.
Hindsight is 20/20. My only thing with Edmonton, and that would say this goes back to a previous regime, is that there was an opportunity to trade this guy a couple of years back when it looked like, you know what, he wasn't going to fit in there and you would have got more of a return. But, you know, I mean, like I said, that was with a different regime. It's just incredible now that Peter Chiarelli has traded Taylor Hall. He's traded Tyler Seguin. He traded Phil Kessel, and he's now traded a number one pick, and now Yakupov in his career as a general manager. So the one thing we know about Peter Chiarelli is he's blind when it comes to where a guy was picked in the draft, because those are all top five or six players in different drafts that he has shown no hindrance in trading away.
So heads up, Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah. But you know what, guys? I think too, the fact that you know, they got a kid, a good kid that fell to them, the Finnish kid, his name.
Jesse Puljujärvi.
You know, I think that kid fell to him, and they do have a nice cachet of young players up front, and I think that's what made Yakupov expendable. It's just hard to believe that. You can't get more of a tangible return for him, but I think that's how quickly his fall from grace has been in the last couple of years.
But the interesting thing there is, and he played plenty with Mark Letestu, and yep. it didn't work out there, but there was that, you know, there were those, I mean, how long was it, guys, where he played on the right side of Connor McDavid and Benoit Pouliot. It was a fantastic line, and he was trending towards heating up towards, you know, upwards of 60 to 65 points. Would it not have been sane, I know injuries were very much a factor, to try to create a situation where artificially you pump up the numbers to get more yeah. value? It has been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, no,
I see this as wasted opportunity. Like, you had a shot at doing it and you didn't do it.
And it's not like they were in a playoff spot either. It's not like they were sacrificing something. Yeah, I agree 100%. You could have put them in a situation to succeed to get that value a little bit higher than it actually was. Yeah.
Because let's face it, guys, we've all known that there was a mantra there that this kid's days were numbered there. He was one of the guys. I mean, Taylor Hall was the more, I think, created a lot more ripples when he was traded. But we all expected Yakupov to be dealt in the last couple of years. It was just to whom and for what and exactly yeah. when that would happen. And like you said, Jeff, I mean, we've seen this in the National Hockey League before where, you know what, if a team's out of a playoff race, you boost a guy's stock by playing him with better players in order to get a better return because, you know, this return was minimal at best.
I also think this has got something to do with they're going into a new building. It's a new year. It's a new bunch of people that they just want something fresh and they want the fans on their side saying,
yep.
this, we've made a change. we're moving forward. The past is a past. It's a brand new building. We don't want to have to deal with this in the middle of the season. And I think that's one of the reasons. Because you could have hung on to him, and hopefully he got off to a good start this year, and his value went up. But I think they just want to move past this and move on.
And I think that, you know what? I mean, you look at the fact that they've lost. They traded away Taylor Hall. They traded away Yakupov. But I'll tell you what, guys, watching the World Cup, as both you guys covered it as well as I did, when you look at Leon Draisaitl, I think that a lot of people maybe out east here that haven't seen this kid play, their eyes were open about just how much skill this guy has.
Yep.
So when you add him into the mix, you add Pujarvi whenever he's ready to come up. You know, Nugent Hopkins and Eberle are still around, obviously Connor McDavid. It's not every team has this cachet of, you know, such talented young forwards where you can trade away two first overall picks like they have in Yakupov and Hall and still look at and say, boy, they got a nice young stable of forwards, don't they?
The thing about the Yakupov trade that leaves me so scratching my head, and we'll get your closing thoughts on this, Mike, is I just don't know where he fits in St. Louis. I know Schwartz is injured. When he comes back, that'll bump David Perron down a little bit, but he's not going to play top 6 minutes. At best, he'll probably replace Ty Ratty on the right side with Berglund and Yaskin. I don't know. Like I'm having, honestly, Mike, I'm having a hard time finding a spot for Neil Yakupov. That isn't just, well, we're going to sub him out between Ryan Reeves and the Russian kid on the fourth line right side.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. But then again, it's Hitch, okay? And Hitch can be the mad scientist sometimes. You never know who he's going to match up with people. So St. Louis is an interesting team, guys, in the fact that, you look and they have Tarasenko, and he is the bona fide superstar there. After that, I mean, you know, maybe you say Alex Steen. They have a lot of good players. They have a lot of depth. I'm not sure how many game changers they have, but you got to like the depth. I mean, they now have three lines.
Colton Parayko's coming, Mike, and you know it. He's the next great one.
Yep. But does Shattenkirk get traded?
I think so. Absolutely. Attention, Boston Bruins.
Are you surprised he hasn't yet?
100%. I thought he was going to the draft.
Yeah, so did I. You mentioned Parayko. That just because of him, he's coming up. They need to trim a little bit of money, and that would seem to be the obvious choice. So, and while we're on the, we mentioned the St. Louis Blues and we mentioned the OHL. So I'd be remiss to not mention the fact that I think that, you know, barring injuries last year, Robbie Fabry showed a lot. And I think he's one of the guys, I think, this year. I'm not sure if you can call a second-year player to be a breakout player, but I really think this kid's going to be an impact player when all is said and done.
Real quick, just St. Louis is playing Chicago tonight, and they've got Yakupov's on the line with Berglund and Yaskin right now.
Oh, so there you go. So he takes Ty Ratty's spot. So there you go. As we made up, I'm with you on Fabry. You know, playing with Stastny and Steen, you got a home run there.
See, Coach Merrick already had it figured out.
Yeah, he's got it.
Okay,
he's smart.
We got it. We got this done. All right, we got it solved.
So that's why Hitch only has one more year, because you're moving in then?
That would be Mr. Yo, sir. That would be Michael Yo. We'll be taking over.
Yeah, we'll see, Jeffy. If you keep making such shrewd coaching decisions.
Trust me, all my decisions have kept me in radio for a long time, sir, where the money still makes noise in your pockets. On that, we'll let you go. Mike, is always a pleasure, sir. Enjoy tonight's matchup. We'll talk soon.
Hey, guys, you too, and have a great season, and hope to be talking to you guys going forward. And let's remember, everybody's tied for first right now.
Yeah. That's it. Everyone, hope springs eternal.
Guys, let's hope it's a little bit more enjoyable this year as it was opposed to last year. Oh, he's gone.
He's done. See, day late, dollar
short. Saturday
night.
He's going out. He's going out partying right now.
I think I'm done with you two Billy Goats and hanging up. All right, and we're done with this segment. When we come back, we'll be joined by Louis DeBrusque of, wait for it, I'm going to love saying this, Hockey Night in Canada.
Nice.
Louis DeBrusque will break down the Oilers. We'll go have a little trip around the NHL as well with Louis. Merrick and Frostelic alongside Todd Hlischko. You are listening to Hockey Nation on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Stay tuned.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hockey Nation. Jeff Merrick for Gord Stellick alongside Todd Hlischko, standing by for Louis DeBrusque of Hockey Night in Canada.
Sweet Lou.
Or as I like to call him, Jake DeBrusque's dad. Have you seen, hang on, honestly, first round draft pick at a Swift Current, played last year with the second half with Red Deer. Have you seen what Jake DeBrusque has done at Boston Bruins camp?
Yeah, he's been unbelievable.
Outstanding.
Has a little bit better hands than his old man did. But
By a smidge.
By a little bit. But
And you know what? And you know what he did a lot of last year in Swift Current and in Red Deer? Killed penalties.
Yeah.
Like, he's a really good defensive player,
too. You got a guy that's an all-round player that can score goals like that, and you don't have to worry about him in the defensive zone. That's exactly what you want if you're an NHL coach.
And he's the second-generation player, so he has the leg up because Dad went through everything, and I'm sure I can tell him some stories about being a teammate with Todd Hlischko with Knights back
then. Yeah,
I
could tell you some stories about Sweet Lou. He was an unbelievable teammate.
I was telling you off-air, there are only two guys that I've ever seen run the table in the OHL when it comes to fights.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Johnson's one, Peterborough, and the other is Lou DeBrusque.
Lou DeBrusque, yeah, well.
The London Knights. I never saw him handle. I saw Eric Cott, but.
Well, I know playing against, so I was in Guelph the 1 year, my first year in Guelph, in the OHL, and I remember going into London and being scared out of my, Louis was on the ice. And then I was fortunate to get traded first start of the season to London and ended up getting to play on the same line as with Big Louis a couple times.
All right.
So it was kind of nice, and it was nice to have that guy with you as opposed to playing against him.
Well, that guy is now an analyst for Hockey Night in Canada, also doing analyst work for the Edmonton Oilers on Sportsnet, our man Louis DeBrusque. Louis, as I was introducing you before you came on the air, Jake DeBrusque's dad, holy smokes, is your son doing it in Boston camp. He scores the shootout winner against the Philadelphia Flyers, sets up the game winner the other night. Louis, how close is your son to making the NHL, bud?
You know, I think he's pretty close. He's certainly in the mix. He's not playing today in the game versus the Flyers. So, I mean, that kind of, I'm not sure if what that indicates for him. But listen, he's had a really good camp, and I think he has to be really proud of that. And as you guys know, it's a fine line, right? It's a fine line between making a team, not making a team, especially when you're a young guy. So, you know what? He feels really good about his camp. He feels he's made strides in the summer. He's ready for his first year of pro, and regardless, he's either going to be in Boston or in Providence. So, you know what? We'll see how it goes for him. But yeah, I think he's right there on the bubble.
Yeah, he's been playing unbelievable, Lou. Listen, real quick, we're going to get into it here. Obviously, the big news out of Edmonton is Neil Yakupov getting moved to St. Louis. And, you know, what is, you know, aside from media and everyone else, what are you hearing from the fans' reaction over there? Are people excited? Do they feel like it's just they're happy that he has now moved out and they can move on? Like, what is the feeling in Edmonton right now?
Well, I have to say, and before I answer that question, I have to say it was great to play with Hlischko when he came over to London.
We did get that commentator yelled at all the time when he.
I love saying that name too. It was great.
That's at the old barn by the highway.
Yeah,
absolutely, the old gardens, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? Listen, it was a hot button topic here, as you guys well know. And I think that if you were to ask fans, you'd probably get 50-50. And that's kind of exactly how it was. And people, you know, Neil came in with all this hype and obviously the way he played in the OHL and how he came in as a real top scorer and a guy that could one-time the puck. And everybody thought he was going to be that next, you know, Pavel Bure type of player. But it just didn't pan out to be that way in Edmonton. And listen, it was hard for him as well. I will say that, you know, talking to Nail, this is a real hard market when people start to get on you, start to question what's going on in your game. And there was talk last year that he potentially asked for a trade. Then he kind of downplayed that. And it was time. You know what? Listen, it was time for him to move on personally as a player. And it was time for the organization to move on. And, you know, it's never an easy situation when you take a player first overall like Neil Yakupov and it doesn't pan out. But listen, not all players pan out. So that's just the way it happens in the National Hockey League. And it became, in my perspective, in my opinion, it became a little bit of, I don't want to say sideshow. It was certainly a distraction for the players. It was certainly a distraction for us. It was a hot button topic that we always wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I wish him nothing but the best, because I think the kid does want to be a good hockey player. I think he does work hard in the offseason. I think he lives and breathes the game. It just didn't work in Edmonton, and he's among a whole ton of players in the past that, has happened with for him. Not working out with an organization and not kind of getting, achieving what he wanted to here anyway. But yeah, I think, you know, like Taylor Hall, if you were to ask people, there's going to be some people that thought it was crazy, some people that thought it was great.
Right.
There's a lot of opinions here, but the one thing that stays the same is the fact that this team hasn't made the playoffs in 10 years.
And with the Taylor Hall deal, bring in Adam Larson, and, you know, now, as we see last night, the one-year contract for Chris Russell, you can make the argument that, you know, to be blunt, you know, Adam Larson is the only legit right-hand shot, right-side defenseman that Edmonton has.
And Peter Shirelli's all over the left-right balance,
when,
too. That's
when they brought in Larson, it was all about right-left combinations. You need that. They bring in another left-shot defenseman in Chris Russell. That probably means that Andre Sekera will play out of position as a left shot on the right side. That's not great. Help me make sense of the Chris Russell deal here, Louis. Is it just, you know what, he's good on special teams and he can block shots? How does it work?
You know what, for sure. And I think, you know, we've talked about him in the past, too. This is a guy that competes each and every night. He makes it hard for you to play against him. And, you know, I think he's proven to people that he has that tenacity. He's willing to step in and block shots. Penalty killing is an area they definitely want to get better at as well, and he's going to help in that regard. So, and he's an offensive guy, too. I mean, this is a player that kind of made a name for himself in Calgary as being a versatile guy that can play in a lot of different situations and was going to give you a certain type of a game each and every night. So I was a little surprised to not see him sign earlier in this offseason, to be honest with you. I thought somebody would have jumped on him and signed him up, but this is an opportunity at really a low risk when you look at a one-year deal for Edmonton to bring him in and see if he works out. Because if he does, you get him at what was looked to be a discount for what he was probably asking for after his years in Calgary. And you know what? For them, they're looking for as much help as they can get in the back end. So you're getting a veteran player back there again that can step right in and play the way he can play. And yes, I agree. They still have to work out the right left. There's no question about that. It's hard. You know, it's difficult to navigate through the National Hockey League and find players that you can sign, trade, acquire to fill holes that you need, because those players are filling holes somewhere else. And it's not easy to do that. So Peter Chiarelli is going to have his work cut out for him. And I've said it before, I don't think he's the kind of guy that's ever going to stop trying to improve this team, as every general manager is doing in the National Hockey League. And he's shown already that he's not going to be afraid to be an aggressive guy and go out there and make big deals and make trades and shuffle things up, which is, I think, the way you have to be nowadays. You have to try and get yourself better. And sometimes it's not going to work. And when it does, though, it's the way you're looking to go.
Louis, we look at the Edmonton Oilers team. There's been a little bit of a transition going on. And when I mean that, I mean in terms of size. You know, you're bringing in some big bodies like Patrick Maroon, 6'3", Lucic, 6'3". All these guys, Zach Cassian, 6'3". You're looking at a little bit of a bigger team. Yet the surprise of the camp, and unfortunately he's hurt right now, is Drake Kajulia at 5'9", 170. I mean, out of University of North Dakota, kind of made a big splash in Edmonton and has been threatened to make this team. I know he's a little bit, he's injured right now, but what's the projection on this kid?
Well, he's had an amazing camp, and I've liked him right from the get-go. Right from the rookie camp, he's come in and he's just shown that he can play at a real high level. And he can play wing and center, which is amazing. You know, for a young guy to come in the way he has, to be able to fill two roles like that and do what they've asked him to do, they love him. And he banged his hip up a little bit. I don't think it's too serious, so I think he'll be ready to go come first game of the season, and he's going to make the team. You know, in my opinion, it would be ludicrous for him not to make the team the way he's come in. And this is something we've talked about a lot here in Edmonton. There hasn't been enough players like Drake that have come in and knocked the door down to try and take a position.
Mm-hmm.
There's been too many times where you're waiting for the young players to come in, aside from the first overall picks and the high draft picks, to come in and just knock the door down and say, I'm ready. Somebody's going to have to go because I'm staying in the National Hockey League. And that's exactly what Drake did. He came in and he won himself a spot to start the season. And getting back to your first question there, Todd, about the size, you're right. I mean, I saw that lineup. I was in the building the other night when Winnipeg came in. There was 6'6", 6'5", 6'4", 6'3". I mean, I looked at Winnipeg's lineup and I think there was nine or 10 guys that were over 6'3" playing against the Oilers that day. And now last year, the year before, 2 years, 3 years ago, you would have said, ooh, this could be a tough night for them because there's a big squad coming in. And then I looked at the Oilers roster and said, you know what? They match up really well against this team. And they were actually just as physical, if not more physical, than Winnipeg was. So that's the way Peter Chiarelli wants to build his team, is with size. And when you have that size, you can inject a guy like Cajula that plays a nifty, fast game and a smaller stature because you have the size to protect him on the outside and around him. And I think the same thing with Connor McDavid. If you're going to have a superstar like that playing, make sure there's guys in the lineup that can protect him. And Milan Lucic coming in was the first big piece of that puzzle. And listen, Patrick Maroon's come in lighter and in better shape as well. So he's another guy that's a big power forward that can put up numbers. He's had a great camp. I think it's the way to go. You know, you have to still maintain the speed aspect, but it never hurts to have a little size.
Quick final thought on Drake Cajula, former member of the Stouffville Spirit of the OJHL. That is my hometown. You can see them in action tonight against Markham. Big rivalry.
Nice.
7:30 at Stouffville Arena. Thank you very much for the plug for Kenny Burrows and the boys.
I heard it's like 16, 17 there. We got our first snowfall.
I was going to ask, you have the shovels out yet, bud?
Bunch of Silver Spoon Ontario guys. I can only say that because I come originally from Ontario.
I'm a little bit
of a converted Westerner now.
Have you shoveled yet, sir?
No, you know what? But I did have to get the broom out to get the snow off the vehicles this morning. It was pretty heavy and thick on it.
Well, listen, I mentioned this to you when we had our town hall the other day. Couldn't be more happy for you. Just telling, you know, Todd, how hard you worked to get to this position. But, man, I am just so thrilled that you can be one of the analysts on Hockey Night in Canada this year. I'm so proud of you and watch you develop, you know, from your first days in broadcasting to where you are right now. It's been a home run for Louis DeBrusque. And hopefully it'll be a home run for your son Jake as well with the Boston Bruins. Thanks so much for stopping by today, Lou, and we'll catch up down the road.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
There he is, Lou DeBrusque, former teammate of Todd Helou.
That's funny. I forgot all about that. When I first got traded there, the guys were trying to figure out what kind of gimmick they can do for me. So I happened to get an empty net goal that night, and the announcer throws that out. And I remember it's funny because Lou kept on saying he got a big kick out of that.
Yeah.
After the game, first game, the game is over in the locker room, and he starts doing that. Helou. Oh, that was interesting. He remembers that. But
true or false, London, Niagara, Brad May once skated to the penalty box with a note from the coach saying Brad May is going to fight you.
Yeah, we actually had Brad on one time, and he was talking to us about that exact episode. And
that's awesome.
Real long story quick, Bill LaForge was with the coach of Niagara Falls, and we were playing them. We were playing with the London Knights real quick, and Brad May sends a note over, and it's from Bill LaForge. And basically it said, any time that you get on the ice, Louis, Brad will be on you. And Louis just looking at you. You got to be kidding me. Anyways.
Right. I just got a teacher's note
from
Bill LaForge.
It was interesting.
All right, we got to hit a break heavy up against it. Ken Holland, Detroit Red Wings general manager, joins us here in a couple of moments. Hockey Nation returns. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Welcome to Hour 2 of Hockey Nation. Jeff Merrick for Gordon Stellick alongside Todd Helouchko. Just over an hour away from puck drop in Detroit, Joe Louis Arena. It is the Detroit Red Wings and the Toronto Maple Leafs concluding their preseason schedules. Cuts today on both sides. We're standing by for Detroit Red Wings general manager Ken Holland to join us here in a couple of moments. But Todd, before we get to Ken, as we try to make contact with him here, wide brush thoughts. What are you specifically looking for tonight from both sides? Henrik Zetterberg makes his season debut tonight for the Detroit Red Wings. Still more decisions to be made on the Detroit side, certainly on the Toronto side as well. What's the spice in your chili tonight?
Well, you know, with Toronto, I want to, you know, there's one game left, and I think that there's not going to be a lot of decisions made. I think on the whiteboard, they know who's going to be starting with this team. But I'm really interested to see, like, I think that the line of Tyler Bozak, JVR, and Mitch Marner is going to be a very unique line for the simple fact that Mitch Marner has played in London for all these years with players that may have not been at his skill set. He's going to get a chance to really play at that level with the skill set of Bozak and JVR. I really believe that this kid can do some real magic on that line.
Speaking of magic, the Detroit Red Wings have had it for quite some time now. The architect of a number of outstanding Detroit Red Wings squads is Ken Holland. He joins us right now. Ken, first of all, good evening. The preseason schedule concludes this evening. Henrik Zetterberg makes his debut for your squad tonight. What is most interesting about this game tonight for your team, Ken?
Well, I mean, first off, probably, you know, both teams have as close of the regular season rosters as any game we've played. And then you know, it's our first look at Frans Nielsen, Thomas Vanek, Zetterberg's first game. So looking forward to seeing how some of these parts fit together. I'm sure we'll be a work in progress here in the early going with, you know, we got a lot of new faces, to Steve Ott as well. I'm not sure that we'll have Cronwell here in the first couple of games. So we're a little bit of a work in progress, and tonight is an opportunity to have some key players. Thomas Tatar, who played in the World Cup, it's his first preseason game for us. So our first real opportunity at, 85% of our team.
Ken, you know, with the interesting move from Dylan Larkin going to from the wing to the center, you know, what are your expectations from this second-year player?
Well, he's a center iceman. You know, when we drafted him, he's played center ice his entire life. Last year at 19, to take some responsibility off him and really let him transition from college to the National Hockey League. We put him on the wing. He played a lot with Zetterberg, and I think both were good for each other. He's a tremendous transporter of the puck, and Z is still as good as ever in the offensive zone, and good defensively. So now we're gonna, Dylan's played center all of training camp. We're hoping that that's where he's going to be all year. But as we go along, if we need to make some changes and move some people around, we certainly know that Dylan also can do a real good job at wing. I think one of the things you want to have when you have a team is you want to be good down the middle, and you want to have versatility. And, you know, with Dylan, Zetterberg can always move to the middle. We've got Frans Nielsen, Helm, and Sheehan can play down the middle. We got Luke Glendening centering our fourth line. So we've got some options down the middle if we want to make some adjustments.
Are we getting to a point now, Ken Holland joins us, general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. Are we getting to a point now, Ken, and we see it certainly at the international level, and we're starting to see it now in the NHL. Are we getting to this point, Ken, where you can never have enough centermen, whether they're, you know, playing their natural position or displaced on the wing?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've, Justin Advocator, I guess, another guy that, you know, he was drafted as a center iceman, played center ice in kids hockey and junior and at Michigan State. So, I think that obviously center is a position with a lot of responsibility. I think it's hard to all of a sudden make somebody that's played wing their whole life and try to make them play center. I think that it's way easier to have a center iceman who's used to playing 200 feet, who's used to playing down low in the defensive zone, and asking him to switch over to the wing. So, you like to be deep all over the place. But certainly, center is one of the positions I think everybody would like to have some depth at.
Kenny, from the forwards to the defensemen, I'm, looking at Nicholas Cronwall. He's now 35 years old. I still believe he's an elite defenseman in the National Hockey League. But as players get older, there's always a need to look to the future and figure out who's going to eventually take over the leadership role and play the tough minutes on the back end. With that said, is it safe to say that Danny DeKeyser will most likely be that guy?
Yeah, I think Danny, obviously we signed him to a 6-year deal this summer. He's 26 years of age. Got one. This was his 1 year of RFA, and then he was been unrestricted next summer. He's really, in my opinion, grown into a top pair defenseman. Alexei Marchenko played real well, I thought, for Russia at the World Cup. He shoots right. I think that he played, the last 40, 50 games for us last year after getting called up. 24 years of age. I think Marchie is a top four defenseman. We obviously signed Mike Green last summer. I thought the first half of the year, it took Mike a little bit of time to adjust to, our team and just, different environment, different coach. And I thought the second half of the year, he played, took his game to another level and played real well for the playoffs. So certainly Mike Green is a player that he's 30 years of age. We're looking for Mike Green, Alexei Marchenko, Danny DeKeyser. Those are probably three of the guys that are going to be top four defensemen here. Kroner, when he's healthy, he's battling some wear and tear. He's a warrior. He's got a big heart. He hasn't. We told him he could take some time off from training camp, but just try to have himself ready for opening day. So he just started skating with our team this week. Not sure if he'll play the first regular season game, but he should be ready for us early in the season, and hopefully he feels good. And then, you know, Brendan Smith, 27 years of age, with the departure of Kyle Quincy, it's a real opportunity here for you know, for Brendan to try to take his career to another level. We played in Pittsburgh the other night. He played 25 and a half minutes because we'd left some other defensemen behind, and he played real well. So, you know, our defense is a little bit of a work in progress due to the injury of Nick Cronwell, you know, Ryan Sproul, Xavier Ouellette, who both are 22 years of age, have played 3 years pro in the American Hockey League. We're going to give them long looks here, and they might even start with us as we head into the season. And obviously, hoping that some of these people I've talked to, Jonathan Erickson, the other guy that I thought that last year he come off it a little bit, and he trained hard this summer, and we need Big E to bounce back. So we've got some, you know, Jonathan's 31 years of age, so our people aren't old. We just certainly need some of them to play to the level that they've played at in the past.
Wings general manager Ken Holland joins us on Hockey Nation. American for Stelic alongside Todd Halushko. From the young kids, Ken, who impressed you the most this year at camp?
Probably Tyler Bertuzzi would be one of them. He's been excellent. Anthony Mathis had a very good camp. I thought last night Svechnikov with a couple of goals. Now he's a first-year pro. He played junior last year in the Quebec Junior League. And, you know, the rosters from both teams last night were more American leaguers than national leaguers. But certainly Tyler Bertuzzi and Anthony Mantha have had, free from our young kids, have had real good preseasons.
Ken, you know, switching gears over to Toronto a little bit, and obviously the familiarity with Mike Babcock, you see their lineup and you see all these young guys that could potentially make the team. And we were discussing this earlier in the show is, you know, what is your take on too many young guys or not having enough young guys? Like this potentially Toronto could have as many as 6 young guys under the age of 22 get on, like, started with this National Hockey League. I know your theory in Detroit is let them go down to Grand Rapids and marinate, but when is too many young guys not a good thing?
Well, I mean, first off, you know, fortunately, I guess in Detroit, over these years when we had Yzerman and Lidstrom, we didn't have guys like Austin Matthews, who's number one overall. So, you know, I might have handled, you know, number one and number two and number three overall differently than I would have handled, you know, the players that we had selected. So, you know, there's a different crop, but there's a difference between young players and young players. And certainly some of the young players that you're talking about with Toronto, I mean, they're high picks and they've been elite players at every other level that he played at prior to coming to the National Hockey League. One of the things that we've had in Detroit through the years has been tremendous role models and leadership. And I thought that, you know, the job that Igor Larionov and Steve Yzerman did as leaders off the ice for guys like Zetterberg and Datsyuk were really a roadmap for those two young kids, Zetterberg and Datsyuk, and how to be pros. And I think Zetterberg and Datsyuk have been, you know, role models for the Abdelkaders, and I thought it was important that Dylan Larkin spent a year watching Pavel Datsyuk, you know, go about his trade on and off the ice. So, you know, I think that you'd like to have, you know, some good veteran leadership here in Detroit. At least we've had some good veteran leadership around our whenever we've had young kids. But again, we haven't had, because we've had teams that have had Yzerman and Lidstrom and some of those players through the years. Larkin at pick 15 is the highest pick we've had since 1993. I think 1993 we had Martin Lapointe. So we haven't had a pick in the top 10 in, I don't know, 93, 03, 13, you know, 20, 22, 23 years. So
you do that draft over Larkin.
You handle those players probably differently than you handle the players that we've drafted here through.
You do that draft over, Ken, and that Larkin's going to be a number one or number two overall pick. So great at number 15. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, he's a good player. He's certainly an important young player to our franchise. He, In a game in a league that's getting faster, he's got tremendous speed. And the other thing he's got is he got a big motor. He loves to play hockey, and he brings it every day at practice and to a game. And so certainly he's an important young player for this franchise.
Leafs and Wings, 7 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Wings general manager Ken Holland along with us, American for Stelic alongside Todd Hlushko. Thomas Vanek, 1 year, $2.6 million, two-time 40-goal scorer with the Buffalo Sabres. He says he thinks he can still score 20 goals this season for the Red Wings. Ken, from your point of view, what's the expectation for Thomas Vanek?
Certainly, we'd let you know. If you look at our team, you know, we're hoping to have a lot of players score 20 goals. I think that's got to have to be how we have success. You know, if you look at our roster, we don't have a player that you think is going to get 80 points, and you probably don't have a player that you think is going to get 40 goals. You know, 2 years ago, Tatar Nyquist had 28 and 27. They're still 26 and 25 years of age. So we need lots of 20-goal scorers. So certainly if Thomas Vanek could be one of the players on our roster that gets 20 goals, that's how we're going to score our goals and try to create our offense. I think we expect him to help our power play. We're going to give him an opportunity in the power play. He's a right shot. He's a big body. I think he can play, you know, there's different positions that he can play on the power play. I watched him real close at the World Cup. I thought he had a real good World Cup playing for Team Europe. You know, we're hoping that we've got a player that's very, very motivated and looking for an opportunity here in Detroit to bounce back. So, you know, with the signing of Vanek and Frans Nielsen, you know, those are two that we're hoping are going to chip in with some offense.
Let's conclude on Frans Nielsen. And Ken, we thank you for your time. Way too simple and probably not fair to the player to say that he's there to replace Pavel Datsyuk, but the signing does come on the heels of Pavel Datsyuk leaving the Red Wings organization. What's your expectation for Frans Nielsen?
Well, I obviously we liked him. You watched him. Our scouts really liked him. We signed him to a 6-year contract. But, you know, and watching him every day at the World Cup and watching him real close, obviously, because, you know, we owned him. You know, he's a 200-foot player. He can play in the penalty kill. I think, you know, he does it right. He looks to me like he does it right. Like, he doesn't overextend a shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the play's not there, he lays the puck to safety. He was on the ice late in the game with big draws against Taze and Getzlav, and he won some of those draws in the second game. So we're looking for him to be a 200-foot player. I think that if you look at the guide and record book the last 3 years, he's got somewhere around 50 points. If he could continue to do that here, we'd be thrilled. I mean, that's what Pav did the last two or three years, was around 50 points. 20 goals or so at 50 points. Certainly, we would be thrilled with those offensive statistics. You know, he's going to be a center on one of our top two lines, maybe our top line. I think at home that there are nights when Jeff Blashill can match up Luke Glendening. Drew Miller was a big loss for us in February, getting him back and signing Steve Ott. In the early going, they've been a really good line for us. They can play against anybody, and they can check. So, certainly there's on home games, Jeff Blashill has the option to play, Frans Nielsen's line against the other team's top lines, or he could use Luke Glendening against some of the other team's top lines. So I think what Frans Nielsen gives us is flexibility. He can play against the other team's top lines, or he can play against different people. So we're not expecting him to get 80, 90 points. I think that's an unreal expectation, but
sure.
If he can continue to do for us what he did for the New York Islanders, we'd be thrilled.
Versatile with the Islanders, same expected with the Detroit Red Wings. Ken, on that, we'll let you go and take care of the rest of your business for this evening. Best of luck this season, and good luck with the playoff streak. All right, he's out quick.
Yeah, Frans Nielsen, I like watching him play in the World Cup this past September.
Yeah.
He is very impressive. I like him. I mean, you know, you're not going to play Datsyuk at all. But Frans Nielsen, I think that's going to be a big loss for the Islanders, losing a hit that hit. They didn't want to lose a guy of that capability. But Detroit, they've got an eye, and they know when they bring guys in, like you talked about Vanek, you talked about Franz Nielsen. There's just something about that Detroit organization that gets the best out of players, whether they're coming from another organization trying to regenerate or recreate the magic that they had in the past, or just picking up from where they left off. But I think they got a winner in Franz Nielsen. I like him. I don't think he's a number one guy, yeah. But he's a solid top six forward.
It's easy when you have 5 and 13, to say nothing of 40.
Yes.
Those three players key for anyone's development that enters that organization. You know, it's interesting. You asked about Dylan Larkin and the transition from the wing to the middle. He's a second-year player. Is he strong enough on draws? That would be my
yeah.
There's no concern about the wheels, no concern about how he sees the ice and sees the game. Strong enough as a second-year guy on draws? That's where young centermen always struggle, Tom.
Yeah, well, I think that we saw, he made a good point of it last year. He said he didn't want to grind him into the NHL and they wanted to take a little bit of the pressure off as being a winger last year. And I'm sure he's been working on it and he's gotten better. And you know, as Detroit, as you know as well as I do, they're not just going to throw somebody into the fire if they don't think he's prepared for it. So I'm sure they've done their research on it. He's done a lot of work in the middle. But big responsibility. If you're not a big guy in the NHL, you got to be strong. You have to have a lower trunk. You've got to be able to have that core strength a guy like Sidney Crosby has, who's not overly big in terms of height, but just he's put together like a bull. And Dylan Larkin, yeah, he still has some years to grow and to get into that. But obviously, I'm sure that they would not put him in that situation if they didn't think he was ready to go to the center position.
Detroit's a fascinating team. It's a team that's trying to rebuild itself in some ways, but do it on the fly and not take too much of a step backwards and stay in the playoffs for the revenue that comes associated with it. You look at that blue line right now, whether it's DeKaiser or Green or Erickson, Cronwall, Smith, Marchenko, the players that Ken just mentioned a second ago, and you say to yourself, well, you know, the future of that blue line is going to be players like Joe Hicketts, Ville Saariarvi, Dennis Cholowski, they picked up in the first round this year, Filip Hronek. I mean, it's going to be those type. But you look at the forwards up front, it'll be the aforementioned Dylan Larkin. It'll be Andreas Athanasiou. It'll be these types of guys. Yeah. Yevgeny Svechnikov, who we saw light up for two
goals
last night.
Yep.
In Hamilton, played on maybe the best line in all of junior last year with Maxim Lazarev and Pierre-Luc Dubois and Cape Breton. That's the future. The trick now for Detroit is, how long can you stay competitive at the NHL level until all these kids are ready?
Well, that's the interesting thing about it. Like, this is a unique year for the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, obviously they have that ongoing playoff appearance record. What is it at right now?
It's
25 years of getting into the. You're just wondering that if there's a moment, maybe it's this year that the Detroit can finally say, okay, let's press the reset button, and not tanking anything by any means, but if they fall out, he made mention that the highest pick they had was 15 Dylan Larkin in so many years. I mean, when do they kind of say, okay, well, if things don't go that well this year.
I can't see Ken Holland doing it.
I know. He doesn't want that.
You know
that.
Ken Holland.
I know.
I can't see Ken Holland doing that.
But if it did happen, it's not
new
the worst thing.
New rank coming next year. I don't know, Todd.
But this year, it's not the worst thing that could possibly happen, them getting a top 10 pick. Just because of all the things that you've mentioned, the guys that are getting a little bit older, and they're basically holding the spot down until these guys are ready to take over on a full-time basis.
Peter Mrazek, number one, Jimmy Howard, backup. That's 1-2 to you.
Well, Jimmy Howard, I think that's going to be him. He's got a huge contract. I played well against the American League Leafs the other night.
Well, and don't forget, like when Peter Mrazek went down after the All-Star break last year and completely lost his game, if they didn't have Jimmy Howard,
exactly.
We would not be talking about a playoff streak.
And you look at any team that has been able to go a little bit in the playoffs and have success, you have to have a solid 1 and 2. I don't think you want your number two goaltender making $5-6 million, which is, I think that's Jimmy Howard's.
5.2 for 3 more years when he's 32 years old.
It's a lot, but I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it is what it is right now. I think down the road, if someone's looking for a goaltender and if Jimmy Howard puts up some serious numbers, I think obviously they would try to move him to get some pieces back. But
wait for the injury?
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, look at Pittsburgh
right now.
You've got Marc-Andre Fleury, you've got Matt Murray. Matt Murray goes out. So it's not a bad backup plan to have Fleury all set and ready to go, which I think down the road, he'll probably be on the way out as well. But to start off a season, you've got to have some depth in goaltending. If you don't have it, you're not going to go very far.
Maple Leafs facing off against the Detroit Red Wings. Top of the hour, we'll head to the Joe Louis Arena. Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph with the call. Both teams concluding their exhibition schedule, the preseason schedule, and both of them playing a number of games all at once as well. I mean, the Detroit Red Wings are on a run here. The Toronto Maple Leafs certainly. Both teams played last night in Hamilton tonight. They will take the act to Detroit to conclude the schedule. Henrik Zetterberg is on the back nine of his career.
Yep.
Henrik Zetterberg has played a lot of big minutes, has played a lot of heavy minutes for the Detroit Red Wings, and the wear and tear is showing up on the body. And he's done such great work for the Red Wings, not just on the ice and production-wise, but shepherding players and teaching young players, instructing young players. It's going to be tough when one day he goes the way of Johan Franzen and goes the way of Pavel Datsyuk and Nick Lidstrom, because that will, in a lot of ways, sort of signal the final end of that era of the Red Wings.
Yeah, the last chapter will be finished with when Henrik Zetterberg goes out. I mean, it's amazing when I look at it. I look at all the, what is it about the Swedish players that just have, like, I mean, I look at Daniel.
Let me throw one to you.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Sweden that's always been fascinating to me.
Oprah? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I heard it's a pretty good spot.
Oh, yeah. You only know it by reputation, of course, really, never having darkened the doorways. Name me one Swede who's been a problem with the team.
With any team. I know,
like,
you
there,
can't.
There have been problems. There have been Canadians that have been problems with teams, Americans and Finns and Russians, and go right down Czechs and right down the list. When have you ever heard a team, a general manager, a coach, a player say, you know what the problem is? Oh, that Swede's a bad apple.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen.
They're like the low maintenance people / low maintenance players.
They really are. And I mean, and I played with a ton of them. And it's exactly what you're saying, Mark, is Jeff. Is why did I just call you Mark?
I thought it was Merrick, but you kind of stepped on your tongue. That. I don't know what
Anyways,
you're going on about. Eating space
cake
today.
Yeah, it's because I'm used to Gordy.
That's all right.
So, but anyways, real quick, get back to the Swedes. I don't know what it is about the Swedes, but I agree with you 100%. I've played with a ton of them, and they're always the best guys in the dressing room.
Right?
They're always looking to go out for dinner with you. Like, they're just good people. There's never a bad apple. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just it's the way they're brought up. Small country, great culture, but awesome individuals. And I would have Swedes on my team any day of the week if I was a general manager.
I always tell this one story when it comes to Swedes. It's the top prospects game in Kelowna a few years ago. And afterwards at the hotel bar, I was talking to one agent whose name I'll leave out of this. And I said, you know, what's remarkable to me is out of all your clients, there's never really an issue with any of them. They're never a headache. And he goes, the reason for that is simple. I recruit from two places, which are the two most low maintenance places for hockey on the face of the earth. I call it the double S rule, the 2S rule. I said, really, where is that? He goes, I only recruit from Sweden and Saskatchewan. That's it. Because people from Sweden and Saskatchewan are the low maintenance people of all time across the globe. We will hit a break. Todd Hlushko will replace his tongue. Yes. He'll be reminded that it is Jeff Merrick for Gord Stellick. Hockey Nation will continue top of the hour. We will default to the rink. It'll be Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. It will be the Detroit Red Wings taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs. In the meantime, we pause. Back with more NHL talk. This is Hockey Nation on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Welcome back to Hockey Nation. Top of the hour, we default to the Joe Louis Arena. It will be the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Detroit Red Wings, both concluding their preseason schedule. Jeff Merrick for Gord Stellick. This is Jeff Merrick, right, Todd Hlushko?
Yes, Jeff. I mean,
very
Mark.
Good.
I mean, Steve, yeah.
Okay, so the new tongue on Hlushko, and that's great. We're standing by for Toronto Maple Leafs lines for this evening. We have them for Detroit, but before we bring you that exciting information, let's hear from Toronto Maple Leafs center Tyler Bozak.
What do you think of Obama singling out Phil?
It's crazy how that stuff happens to him constantly, but his face got pretty red and I was laughing pretty hard, so I loved it.
You texted him right away?
I didn't talk to him about that one. I thought I'd let him slide on that one, but I thought it was pretty funny. There's a lot of excitement. I think, you know, we're confident and we think we got a good young group of guys. I think we got a lot of talent. We obviously got a lot of things we need to work on still, but I think there's a lot of excitement and everyone's just excited to get going. I mean, I definitely wanted to get one more in before regular season started, so I think they're putting in a pretty solid lineup tonight, so it'll be a good test for us, and we're excited for the challenge.
A lot of big boys on that Detroit side. Okay, so some things to unpack there from Tyler Bozak, but first,
yes,
Thoughts on Phil Kessel being singled out by President Obama?
I thought it was awesome. Wasn't I mean, are you great? Kidding me? You got the President of the United States is calling you out, and I don't care what he's saying. He's making a point about it's about you, Phil. And obviously, that's got to be pretty cool. And to see, he was right. Phil's face was just went like 8 shades of red. It was hilarious. Mm-hmm. But it's a feel-good story for the guy. I mean, everyone's basically crapped on him. He's won a Stanley Cup. Everyone's acknowledging now. I love it. I love the fact that Obama mentioned him in that speech. I think that he couldn't have been more thrilled.
What happened to Phil Kessel? How did he go from, you know, the guy who in some ways was run out of town in Toronto to becoming this much beloved cult hero who almost won the Conn Smythe Trophy, was not wanted on the voyage of the USSS, the Team America World Cup of Hockey team? Like, how did he go from being this lovable underdog guy?
You get to go to a team that has Sidney Crosby, Letang, all these unbelievable players that have a pedigree of winning. I really believe that. And then he comes into this.
But other players have done that too. Like, what is it specifically about Phil?
I don't know. Because he was a lightning rod here in Toronto, right? It's the same thing that happened with Dion Phaneuf. When you come to Toronto, I don't think there's any gray area. You're either loved or you're hated. And I mean, we can look at Murphy as well.
There's so many different situations
that you're either loved or you're hated. There's no in between here. And for whatever reason, you know, Phil was part of an organization that just they were awful during his tenure here. So it was easy to crap on the guy that makes the most money, who was supposed to take this team to the next level. He gets traded, and essentially it's for Tyler Seguin. So that you get reminded of that the whole time. Yeah. So everything was against him. And I think it's like what we're seeing with Yakupov. A guy just needs a change of venue. He goes to Pittsburgh. And I mean, he did. He had an unbelievable playoffs with Pittsburgh. And the type of Phil Kessel game that I don't think we ever saw in Toronto, the back checking, the pressure down low, he did everything well. And I think that, you know, when you're accountable, held accountable in an organization the way Pittsburgh was.
But how much of Phil's success, if I can pause on that,
yeah.
How much of Phil's success in Pittsburgh, talking about Phil Kessel,
okay.
Detroit, Toronto, top of the hour. So we're going to get on the Maple Leafs Red Wings page in a sec. How much of Phil Kessel's success do we attribute to Mike Sullivan in that Mike Sullivan, and he may have been selective about it, but it worked. Mm-hmm. Gave a lot of guys the green light to fly the zone early. We saw it with Hagelin. We saw it with Kessel. We saw it with Crosby. You know, there were some guys that were able to linger around the blue line and look to be sprung, whereas a lot of other coaches want you back and collapsing around the net.
Well, I think that is a very valid point, because it gives the guys the green light to do what they want. But with that, I think the players respect the fact that, okay, my coach is giving me the green light to go when I want to go, but I better make sure I'm back in my back end, or else this luxury that I have is going to be taken away from me. So it could strategically have been placed there by Mike Sullivan, who I know very well, that is a thinking man's coach.
Sure.
And I know as well as anyone else is if you've played the game before and you do have the freedom, a coach gives you that freedom, you want to make sure that you're playing the right way on the back end of it as well, so that doesn't get taken away from you. So that, you know, that's a very good point, Jeff. That could have been one of the reasons why Phil Kessel did play the way he did, is because he did have that freedom. And it wasn't just something that, you know, help me out with this one. It was something that I think Phil Kessel respected. He respected the coach. Maybe that respect was lost in Toronto, but he respected as a coach. And you know,
I think part of it too is he just has a shy personality, and people can identify with that.
And in Toronto, they didn't want him to have that. They didn't expect the shy person. They wanted to be vocal, and
they
he never was.
They wanted Matt Sundin, Daryl Sittler, Wendell Clark,
and that
Doug
wasn't
Gilmore.
Him. That wasn't him. So maybe that's the reason, but for whatever reason it was, Phil Kessel is now a Stanley Cup champion. Yeah, he's in Pittsburgh. They love him there now.
And he's taking shots at USA Hockey on Twitter.
Yeah, he is. That's unbelievable. But, you know, taking shots there. But then the President of the United States gets to take a fun little shot at you, which is pretty cool.
It's a great story. Okay, the Detroit Red Wings Lions. Tonight, the debut of Henrik Zetterberg for this season. Been battling injury. He is back for the Detroit Red Wings. He'll play on a line with Nielsen and Tatar. Tatar had a really nice... World Cup of Hockey. Advocator will play with Dylan Larkin and Teemu Palkkanen. Palkkanen, coming in off injury himself as well, had the shoulder surgery last spring. Gustav Nyquist will play with Darren Helm and Thomas Vanek. Looks like Jeff Blashill wants to play Helm and Vanek together. Andreas Athanasiou will play with Riley Sheehan and Anthony Mantha. Those are your forwards, Todd Hlischko.
I'll tell you what, Athanasiou, I'm looking for a huge year out of him. I loved him last year.
Speed, baby.
Oh, he's good. And there's some breakout guys that I'm I'd throw a couple guys out at you real quick. I know we got to get going here real quick, but he's one of the guys that I'm looking for a big year from Detroit. A couple other guys real quick, I'm going to throw them out there. Maybe you can have some. I'm really looking forward to seeing Jonathan Drouin this year, mm-hmm. Anthony Duclair, and Mark Scheifele. I think these are the types of guys, just a few sample size of guys that I think can have a big year. But Athanasiou, who I still have a tough time pronouncing his name from time to time.
You got it right.
Yeah, I love this guy, and I think he is going to be the real deal. And another, a typical guy in Detroit where all of a sudden another superstar comes out of Detroit. You're like, where do they get these guys from? That's another guy that has the mold of a player that can become one of those superstar guys. You're like, man, how come it keeps happening in Detroit?
Drafted by the London Knights, traded to the Barrie Colts. Danny DeKeyser will play with Jonathan Erickson. Don't get married to these deep airs. Jeff Blashill has said, essentially, we're going to put these things in a blender and see what works tonight. Brendan Smith plays with Mike Green. Xavier Ouellette will play with Marchenko. Mrazek will get the start this evening. What are you looking for from the Wings blue line before we get to the Maple Leafs?
Well, you want to see these guys, basically, it's going to be first pass out. There's not a lot of guys in the back end right now that are going to be wheeling and dealing. I think they're going to play the simple game, and I think that's how Detroit's got to play with the back end. A little bit bruised up and not that, talented depth of defense that other teams may have. So I'm just thinking Detroit's looking for the first pass out and keeping it pretty simple on their back end.
Okay, here are your Maple Leafs lines. First line, Tyler Bozak, first line center, right side, Mitch Marner, left side, James Van Riemsdyk.
Nice. You like? I love it. It gives the creativity of Mitch Marner to play with those guys, the guys that are at his skill set right now. I think it's only going to make Mitch Marner that much better.
Austin Matthews, your second line center, alongside Zach Hyman and Willie Nylander. Hyman, get that? Was it down to Hyman and Reichel for that spot? It was sort of similar skill sets?
I think so. And I think Hyman's played a little bit better than Reichel in the training camp. And I think Hyman is going to be a lock for this team. And I think he earned it last year. Mm-hmm. And he's obviously earned it in training camp to make this team coming out of it.
Brooks Like, Matt Martin, and Connor Brown on the right side of your third line.
Love Matt Martin. He's going to be a very, very big part of this team this year.
What about Connor Brown, though?
He's the one that's been quiet right now. We don't know what's going to happen with him, but, I mean, all sorts of offensive ability. But
At every level.
And I'm wondering if he's being overshadowed with some of the guys. But this is the type of guy that can come into this training camp, come into the league, and maybe doesn't garner as much attention, but does get things done offensively, is a guy that's very responsible on his own end, but can be put in the power play and can put up points when asked to.
Mikalik, Holland, and Komarov, that is your fourth line.
Yeah, that's an interesting line. Anytime that Komarov is on a line with anybody, look for a wrecking ball situation to happen at some point. And I'm sure something like that's going to get fired up tonight, being the last game of the exhibition season, heading into opening night on Wednesday.
Here's your D pairings. Martin Marincin with Morgan Rielly. That's your first pairing.
Yeah, well, that's Morgan Rielly, yes. Marincin, I mean, he was a, basically, what was he, a prospect last year that turned into a very reliable guy.
A cast off by Edmonton that many people say, specifically people that have a proclivity to follow the game through analytics, say, what are you doing? How can you let go of a player like Martin Marincin?
I guess I meant to say suspect to prospect. That's kind of what happened last year. And at the end of the day, you know what? I wasn't a big fan when he first playing last year, but he wore on me. He became more reliable. And the analytics people, they love him. And he's going to be, if they're going to have success this year in Toronto, he's going to have to play extremely well.
This one I sort of chuckle at because they've tried this. It lasted a shift, and then they moved him back with Morgan Rielly. Mm-hmm. Zaitsev and Hunwick.
Yeah, well, Zaitsev is the same sort of player that Jake Gardner is somewhat. I mean, I maybe a little bit more reliable defensively. I think he's got the same skill set offensive. He's fast, and putting him with a defensive defenseman like Hunwick, maybe it's going to work. But I really like Zaitsev. I think he's got a lot of upside, and I think he's going to be really, really integral part of the defense this year for Toronto.
Best defenseman for Russia at the World Cup of Hockey.
Played the most minutes, right? Oh, I agree 100%. I think it's true.
Jake Gardner and Frank Corrado. That is your third pair. This is a big one for Frank.
Frankie Corrado, he
needs waivers if you're going to try to send him down. Mm-hmm. That's how they got him in the first place, where Vancouver tried to pull that fast one as well. Mm-hmm. Challenging year for Corrado last year. Frustrating year for Frank Corrado. This one's a big one. Not that you want to put too much on one game, and maybe the decision's already been made, but man, this is a big one for Frank Corrado.
Well, I think the decision has been made. I don't, regardless of what happens today. Frankie Corrado obviously isn't one of Mike Babcock's favorites. I know Lou Lamoriello plucked him from Vancouver and brought him in. Yeah. And, I mean, when he sits 25 games in a row last year, you're not a coach's favorite. But, you can change
them. Todd Gill did that once back in the day. Him or Burns sat him down for an extended play.
And I get it. You can do that, and you can come back from it, and you can change coaches' minds. But I don't think he's the biggest like Mike Babcock's the biggest fan of Corrado, and I don't know if it's like I like Frankie. I think he's a good defenseman. I think he fits in well. But if they were to lose him, if he went through waivers, I don't think it's the biggest loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I don't believe Mike Babcock.
There's about zero chance that he gets through waivers, right?
No, I think he'd get picked up for sure. So they just have to figure out
Vancouver.
If they've got somebody else in the back burners, I mean, there's a bunch of guys that maybe could fit into that sixth, seventh defenseman. So I don't think it's a huge loss. But listen, for Frankie Corrado, he's a Toronto guy. I wish him the best. I hope he sticks around because I do like the way he plays.
Okay, and then in that, didn't have the best debut the other night against the Montreal Canadiens, but Frederik Andersen gets another go tonight.
Yeah, he's got to get back. I mean, you got your feet with Thunder again. If everyone thinks that Frederik Andersen's going to come in this year and he's going to get this team 85 points and he's going to win 50 games, well, it's not going to happen.
He's not going to Ed Belfour this thing?
No, I don't think so. But Frederik Andersen is going to stabilize the net. Of course, he wants to come back in after he gives up 5 or 6 goals the other night. And he'd like to have a solid final game to the season just to get him in and ready for the game Wednesday, because he's undoubtedly the number one goaltender. There's no questions. He signed a huge contract in the offseason. And they're going to need big things from Frederik Andersen if they're going to have any sort of success this season.
What did you make of the game? The one thing that we saw from Andersen specifically in that game is he had a hard time sealing up down low.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre.
I think it's just it's a situation where you're coming off an injury too, and you're trying to find your game again.
Yeah.
And you got to give him a little bit of time. I mean, it's too bad. I would have loved to see him play in the World Cup. Because, you know, not that it mattered so much to Team Europe. They did pretty good without him.
Yeah, Halak was okay.
He was not bad. But I think that would have helped him come along. I mean, so mind you, you can say that he's not going to be tired. But anytime you come off of an injury and you're all ready, because he was in game shape, ready to play in the World Cup, in the Olympic qualifiers, gets hurt. And then all of a sudden, you've kind of reset yourself again and get ready for training camp. And you know, obviously it's taken a little bit, but I expect better things from Frederik Andersen tonight.
I still don't know how that Arturi Lehkonen goal went in, that one that went right over his shoulder.
Is it
the perfect shot? Was the shot, you know, disguised or clouded by Morgan Rielly's blade?
Yeah.
I don't know, but considering how big Frederik Andersen is, how does that shot? I mean, that's a Todd Hlushko shot.
Well, if it's a Todd Hlushko shot, it would have been dumped in the corner. We would have went for a change. But I just think it's one of those things. It's a game, and as a goaltender, you have to have a short memory, and you reset, and you get ready again. So, like I said, if this Toronto Maple Leafs team is going to have any sort of success this year, they're really going to be relying on this guy.
On the Maple Leafs squad this evening, Todd Hlushko is most interested to see, and I'm guessing you're going to say Mitch Marner, but go ahead.
Well, it is. You know what? It's a split. It's Mitch Marner and it's William Nylander. We talk about Mike Babcock loves those guys, and Zai said it earlier, likes the guys that compete. Mitch Marner has William Nylander has all sorts of skill.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a little bit of the sandpaper from this guy. That's what Mike Babcock wants, and that may keep him off this lineup. They got to get this guy being a little bit more gritty.
Nylander plays with Willie Nylander plays on the line with Austin Matthews and Zach Hyman. The aforementioned Mitch Marner will play with Tyler Bozak and James Van Riemsdyk. Those are your lineups for the Detroit Red Wings and the Toronto Maple Leafs. The next hockey voices you will hear are those of Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. It is the conclusion of the preseason schedule for the Leafs and the Wings. Stay tuned. NHL action coming up in moments. This concludes Hockey Nation with Jeff Merrick and Todd Hlushko. We're back in the first.